I just wanted to say thank you so much, Jessica and Ruby, for having this conversation today. And I guess the first thing that I really wanted to ask was for you just to talk a little bit about who you are.
Okay, my name is Ruby. I'm 27 years old. I found out about DAPL when I was a preschool teacher in Boulder, Colorado, and that motivated me to quit my job and go to Standing Rock. I was following the issue very closely, and when I arrived to Standing Rock, I was really relieved and comforted to see so many people there willing to do whatever kind of work. So I saw that Standing Rock was really taken care of, and I noticed that there was 1,200 miles of pipeline that had to be stopped. And I saw a news article from a local paper in Iowa about Jessica Resnicek starting an encampment by herself down at the Mississippi River, which is the largest waterway here in the United States in the northern continent. So I went down there to Mississippi Stand, and I plugged in immediately and was willing to do whatever. I worked on media and participated in boycotts and marches and the whole traditional model of civil disobedience. And here I am today talking to you. Yes.
My name is, my name is Jessica Resnicek, and 36 years old. Really started delving into activism about 6 years ago during the Occupy Wall Street movement. Joined the Zuccotti and the Zuccotti movement in New York. Learned that back in my home city of Des Moines, Iowa, there was a local Occupy movement occurring. Returned to Des Moines and plugged in there and began working tirelessly on the Occupy campaigns here locally on a local level in Iowa at the Iowa State Capitol and around the caucuses. And met through that movement Catholic workers who were at the kind of forefront here in the local struggle. So about 6 years now, I've been plugging in and working on resistance via the Des Moines Catholic Worker House, and have been just engaged nonstop, for the last 5-6 years in various campaigns, everything from anti-war to saving the planet and trying to save the human race while I'm at it, and met Ruby here in Iowa last summer, and it's just been an incredible journey with the two of us together, and I'm eager to share that journey at this point.
What, when you met each other, did you find that common ground in motivation and inspiration?
This is Jessica. I might just preface when I speak. This is Jessica, and I think that's how Ruby and I ended up pairing off. The bottom line for both Ruby and I, and I know for a lot of people, you know, we had hundreds of thousands of people resisting this pipeline. So by no means just Ruby and I who cared so deeply about these issues, but we really hit it off. Our personalities hit it off, and the bottom line for both of us is really to stop this pipeline and to do it peacefully and nonviolently, and to explore, you know, and exhaust all what you might call traditional avenues. I know Ruby referred to. We did a seriously a hunger strike at the Iowa Utilities Board over the winter, boycotts, marches, lockdowns. Mississippi Stand was pretty notorious for lockdowns. And they were effective. I mean, I think that's what where we kind of got a taste of it was one of the lockdowns I did with a different close friend of mine was on the construction site at the boring site under the Mississippi River on the Iowa side, and we locked onto a backhoe, this other comrade of mine and I, and stopped the construction at the boring site for about 4 hours. And I think like. some great conversations Ruby and I had after that was like, 4 hours is great to shut down a construction site, but ultimately, like, we need, we need more than 4 hours. We need not just days, but weeks and months to delay this construction for the ultimate purpose of shutting the pipeline down and having investors pull out. And so Ruby and I were kind of on that vein together of, like, you know, we really need to stop this construction altogether. And it's just been an incredible journey, yeah.
I would say that you've been very courageous and very, where do you pull that well of courage?
For me, this is Ruby, directly from my heart. I've tried to stop caring about this throughout this entire time, honestly, and I can't. I've been involved with other campaigns since, and those are also courageous, but I just can't let this go because all of this needs to be stopped, absolutely. But I saw with Standing Rock that this was a turning point for a lot of things, and we have yet to get a victory out of that. And to me, and for a lot of people, the bottom line was to stop the pipeline. And that is what motivated me to act the way that I have, having exhausted everything else, because I was a preschool teacher and I love kids, and we're not leaving them anything. And it's scary. It's scary what everyone is going through, and what I see a lot is fear to not act, because people have these ideas in their head, I think. And I think it's fear that prevents people from acting, and I was afraid as well, but it had to be done, and that's why I'm here talking to you now, is because these are the conversations that we need to be having as a collective, as a whole. How do we effectively stop this desecration that continues day in and day out?
Yeah, those are the questions that we all have to ask ourselves, and I'm really glad that you're raising those questions. Thank you. And Max, did you have any questions that you'd like to ask?
Sure. Well, what you're saying really resonates with me, and I think the question of how do we actually stop them is critical, and I think the self-questioning element too of recognizing that when something that we're doing isn't working, we have to do something else. And so I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about your psychology as you move towards taking the actions that you did, and then what did you actually end up doing?
Well, Jessica spoke a little bit about, having that almost like a teaser of actually stopping construction with lockdowns. And, one day after another pullback had occurred at the Skunk River, Jessica and I got together and had this idea to mess with the engines of these heavy machine equipment things. And so, we brainstormed, back and forth all day, like, okay, well, what if we take the oil out of the thing? And, and we really don't know how to do that. So why don't we just burn it? Okay, I know how to light a fire. You strike a match. And going and doing that action, it was really liberating and empowering, and at the same time scary, because it's like, oh my gosh, I just committed arson, but it had to be done. That was the first night that I really felt empowered as an individual, and that I did actually make a difference and a concrete contribution to for my standards as a person. So the psychology of it, you know, you're battling with fear. And I believe that fear is placed on us because we are all living in this oppressive system. But that's something that we have to overcome. Otherwise, we continue to allow this to go on and we continue to be oppressed and we have to liberate ourselves through our own actions.
This is Jennifer. One of the things that I saw in your statement that fascinated me about the psychology of this as well, about living beings and not having that kind of object or destroying infrastructure objects as being defined as violence. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so this is Jessica, and I think that this is a message that I've really been trying to work hard at getting out to the activist community here in Iowa and elsewhere. We really have to start understanding the emphasis that our culture and our society and we as people put on property, and really start understanding that these machines are desecrating, you know, the earth and the people and all of its on all of our earth's inhabitants. And we really need to start getting out of that paradigm where we place property on such a high pedestal, especially when that property is destroying every natural resource available to us and not leaving a future for the generations to come. So it's something that I think it's really difficult for people to understand that we were actually, I perceive that Ruby and I's actions were actually preventing destruction. And we were actually, I like to focus on the property improvement that we've made versus property destruction. And absolutely, at every turn, I feel like Ruby and I were acting from our hearts and from our spirits, and with all life on this planet in mind. And absolutely no life was in jeopardy at any time when we were acting. And in fact, our goal was to save lives.
Absolutely. This is Max, and I wanted to ask you, so obviously you two have a history and a background as activists and trying to do the right thing and make the world a better place. And I know my experience has been that the methods that we're always taught are methods that aren't very threatening often to those who are in power. And I don't think it's a mistake that, for example, we get taught the history of Martin Luther King in school, but we don't get taught about the Black Panthers and about Malcolm X. And, you know, we learn about the struggle against apartheid, but we don't get taught that Nelson Mandela organized and committed sabotage and engaged in actions that made him be labeled as a terrorist by the U.S. government and the South African government. And so I'm wondering if you can speak to the history of your understanding of how your actions fit into the history of social movements and people who are called to do what's right, even though it may be illegal, and in the case of the actions that you two carried out, highly illegal.
This is Ruby. I know a little bit about the Black Panthers. I know that narrative that the, you know, government hijacks everything. But I didn't know that Nelson Mandela organized sabotage. That's awesome. So like, just for me, like, it was just a very personal thing, and it's the right thing to do. I live here. I live in the United States, which is a country that perpetuates violence everywhere, including here. And I saw that I had the opportunity to act in this way, and that's what motivated me. So I really can't answer that question. Maybe Jess can.
Well, I think, like, so this is Jess. I think, like, I think Ruby and you both, I mean, it ties into exactly what I'm going to say, which is, like, we're not taught these things. And so Ruby and I feel, like, isolated or alienated from the wider movement when we decide to take these actions. And that's really unfortunate to not feel in solidarity with a historical narrative. Because a lot of our energy is expended, unfortunately, on defending ourselves to the movement. And you just wonder, you know, I'm it's disheartening when I feel like I don't know at times if I'm going to be supported by anti-pipeline, you know, activists. And, you know, and so we do go back over these stories. And fortunately, you know, I come from I've been engaged for the last 6 years in a movement intimately, the Catholic Worker Movement, that has a rich, you know, history and tradition of property, yeah, destruction via a biblical narrative. And so it's one that I've learned to embrace and at least found my little, like, niche where, like, I went, like, in the small, I live in a small intentional community here in Des Moines, and when everybody found out about what Ruby and I had done, you know, a few days ago when we released our press statement, we were immediately supported by our close friends and family. And thank goodness, and that's basically due to an ongoing historical struggle that we have created since the 1930s with Dorothy Day, and at least we can attach ourselves to something and find legitimacy in it, because unfortunately we're having a really hard time anywhere else, and that's just due to lack of information and lack of being taught these things as children.
Thank you. This is Jennifer, and that is fascinating. That's really good information to share about your history and your culture. I'm part of the Political Prisoner, POW, Prisoner Support Group in Deep Green Resistance, and that was a question I really wanted to address, is what do you need right now? What do you need into the future? And how can we be part of that?
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. So we love you. Thank you for asking. So I guess, like, right now, so Jesus, it's been kind of a blur the last couple of days. Ruby and I got out of jail yesterday morning on pretrial release. And what we're scrambling now to do is we are representing ourselves whenever the charges come as they may, these future charges that have not yet appeared. And so we're scrambling to do a couple of things. One thing is to get a website set up where we can have postings, any joint statements that Ruby and I release have up-to-date postings on that website. And also, you know, future hearing, court dates, solidarity actions, a support network information up on a website. In addition to that, we're representing ourselves, but we do have a fantastic federal attorney. His name is Bill Quigley out of Loyola Law School down in New Orleans to stand in as a standby counsel. But he's a great guy and available, but we'd really like to find someone here in the Midwest who would be more accessible and willing to at least assist us in filing motions or communicating with a prosecutor to serve as a standby counsel here more locally. So that in the case that Ruby and I are incarcerated and facing serious charges, it's as we all know, it's really difficult to work from inside that oppressive prison system, and to have somebody a legal advocate here locally that we can work with. So I guess if I had to, Ruby can probably add her own, but like those are the two kind of things that we're trying to scramble to get together before. Who knows? God, you know, the feds could come knocking at our door at any moment.
Yeah, just the offer of support that you're already doing, it is amazing. Thank you for doing what you're doing. And I'm sure I'll have a request or two once I'm inside. But yeah, if you know anyone, any defense in Iowa, that would be really helpful. we're having a hard time trying to find a lawyer in Iowa, I think, just because, like, not this stuff doesn't go on in Iowa.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is Max, and we do have some friends in the legal community, so I don't know anyone off the top of my head, but we do have some friends, activist lawyers, who we can talk to, and we'll definitely be in touch with you too. And
thank you.
And I have a follow-up question, which is just, you know, oftentimes speaking out can be dangerous, and you know, they try and discourage people from building solidarity and speaking about what they did. They want to keep people isolated in the legal system and afraid. And so I'm wondering if you can speak to why you feel called to speak out about what you did, and even to the point of, I think I saw in your video earlier today, of, you know, saying that you hope other people consider these types of similar actions as a way to, again, effectively defend the planet.
Yeah.
Why do you feel compelled to?
Oh, why? Because, like, really, we've tried everything. Hot dog under the sun, man. Like, exhausted my creative possibilities with this. And we were called by The Intercept, like, maybe 2 weeks ago or something, because of the illegal surveillance. And what I've seen with the No Downfall is that it got really fragmented pretty quickly, it seemed, and we lost focus of stopping the pipeline. And I was viewing The Intercept as like this last No Dapple thing in the media, but it was focusing on this illegal surveillance. So after we got off the phone with The Intercept lady, Jess and I were interviewed separately, and we talked together, and I was like, fuck it, man, let's claim it, because we didn't stop the pipeline. We both feel personally responsible for that. And this is the last thing we can do. And you know what? People need to talk about it, because, you know, I'm pretty fresh on this activist scene and security culture and yada, yada. But I feel passionately about it. And I remember trying to talk about it with people that I trusted. And it was like an immediately, like, shut down, do not talk about this. We don't, you know, like, I saw that as fear. And that sucks, because we need to be doing these things. Because apparently this is the only way that they're going to actually listen. And every action that we took, we anticipated the repercussions of them. Although I view them as unjust, these repercussions. But, you know, so we were fully prepared going into it, in that mental mind game of, like, you know, like, I'm driving myself to jail right now. So having had that for several months and still feeling passionately about this, like, I still can't let this go, because this is still really flipping important. And we both have the mental fortitude to step forward. Well, let's step forward then, you know, because people need to have these conversations. And it's important for our own evolution as a people, as a whole, to look, take a step back, look at what's going on, look at what we're doing. We're seeing it as ineffective, because why? We want to stop the pipeline, or, you know, we want to save the old growth forests. We have so many battles. And we want to do that, so let's do it. And if the methods that we're using aren't working, well, let's change our methods. Let's not get stuck in some ego, celebrity, whatever. You know, it's not about – I'm ranting, so I'm going to stop. Thank you.
Why did you come forward with this?
I can speak a little to that also. I mean, we could go on to the next question. I think you've pretty much summed it up, Ruby. How I feel.
Okay.
Cool.
I don't have any more questions for you right now, but I always like to ask if there are questions you wish somebody would ask, or anything that you would like to close the conversation with. Max?
I catch it. parts.
Yeah, well, one question I have, I read in your I read in your press release, and I was just struck with, frankly, how easy it seemed to be from your narrative to actually pull off some of the actions. And I went to an event recently with the Valve Turners, the people who shut down the tar sands pipelines simultaneously.
Right, okay.
And yeah, great action. And what was interesting to me was they talked about how they actually had pretty bad security culture in the planning of their action. They didn't really know how to use all the encryption technology really well, and they just didn't do a super secretive job, and so they kind of expected that maybe the cops were going to be there waiting for them or something when they showed up. They were worried about that. And they weren't. It was a total surprise to the authorities when their action actually happened. So I was wondering if you could just speak to how easy some of this stuff is and how maybe, most of the barriers that we actually face towards shutting this sort of earth destruction down is more in our minds and our hearts rather than, than in the actual danger.
Gosh, we could not agree with you more. I think that if we had anything left to say, that is actually what's on our minds and in our hearts right now, is that I think we created this whole narrative in our minds that this oppressive state and industry was listening to everything we were doing, following us everywhere we went, and that we would inevitably be caught. And you take it a step further, and most of the tools that Ruby and I learned to use, we did a sloppy job at the time at many points. I mean, you hate admitting it, but it's just the truth. Is we went to these places and spaces with the self-garnered knowledge within, a matter of weeks, and were effectively halting construction for weeks on end just via one fire, one valve piercing. And we build our confidence up each time, and we're like, wow, this is really doable. I think that's it's insulting on some level, but it needs to be cleared up. It's Ruby and I acted solely alone. Nobody else was involved in any of these actions. And I think it's hard for people to believe, or we've been hearing some comments of how could these two women pull this off so easily? And it's a matter of determination, and it's a matter of breaking through your own fears and doubts and perceptions of this, undefeatable, like we say in our statement, undefeatable empire. And really, this is doable for lots of people. And I think that's one of the main reasons we wanted to come out and tell people, is because this is easy stuff to do. If Ruby and I had a crew that had doubled or tripled or quadrupled, we really could have stopped this thing. I truly believe it on the bottom of my heart, just via actions like we did.
Yeah, I think that narrative that is in our heads of they're always watching us and blah, 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 it's depression, dude. And, they come out with, the NSA and the blah, 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 and their television shows are this forensic evidence, and this is how we catch a criminal, and blah, blah. It's all crap. It's all crap. They are incompetent. Have you ever talked to a cop? They're not. They're instructed to just follow orders. They do not know how to think critically, and that continues to worsen. So I believe if you're acting with integrity in your own critical intelligence, and you're utilizing that, you can do a lot of good. And to recognize that fear is oppression, ultimately. Liberate yourself.
Inspiring words. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. If there's anything else that you want to add, please, it's right here for you. And if you're ready to close the conversation, that's fine too. It has been really great, really great to be here with you today.
We really appreciate the fact talking to you, and it seems that you all have a strong network of solidarity where you all are, and that is super hopeful, and that is the kind of that communal infrastructure is where we all need to move towards. So thank you all.